Hello, fellow grievers. You have found the Leftover Pieces, Suicide Loss Conversations, and I am Melissa, your podcast host. Join me for real conversations and candid talk on hard topics surrounding the loss of a loved one to suicide. I talk with other loss survivors, mental health experts, advocates, and sometimes I offer my own thoughts. Every week, we explore the questions that haunt us, seek the courage to uncover the healing tools within us, and hopefully offer the comfort of a community that we all need so very much. It's true our hearts and lives have been shattered, but come along with me, and together, let's choose to find meaning and even happiness amid the leftover pieces before us. Welcome. Fellow grievers, today you have found Season 1, Episode 18 of the Leftover Pieces podcast. Today, I welcome Emily Zedzik, a transformational breakthrough coach that helps people break through what is holding them back so that they may move forward and live their most radical life. Emily does this through neuro-linguistic programming, timeline therapy, and hypnosis. In our conversation today, we talk about grief and how anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt are such a big part of suicide loss and the grief that we're left with afterwards. You know that on this podcast, I talk about tools a lot. I talk about in the early days of our loss, how we pretty much rely on survival instinct because we're just in shock and we're just trying to get through. But you know that I also talk about the tools that it takes once we start to move into our new self and want to start rebuilding this new life that we now have. I truly believe that we have the opportunity to decide how we grieve. I also think that there are times in our grief that we find ourselves stuck or unable to kind of move on to the next step. And that is where I found Emily when I was at that place of wanting to move up and move into the next place of my life with my grief, but didn't know how to do it on my own. Working with Emily taught me to trust my unconscious mind, and it put me in a place to take responsibility, knowing that I'm either at the cause or the effect of what's happening, or quite frankly, what's not happening in my life. Emily talks about the differences between coaching and counseling, the difference between a coach and a therapist. She also talks about preconceived ideas of alternative therapies and really digs into the neuroscience behind why the type of coaching she does works. And as we wrap up our conversation, towards the end, she shares what someone could expect if they signed up for one-on-one breakthrough coaching with her. And I share how in unpacking my unconscious mind and learning to leave behind emotions that no longer served me, I was able to get out of my own way and transform my own thinking. I think you're really going to take a lot from this conversation today. So with no further delay, I welcome you to our conversation. Welcome, Emily.
Hi, it's so great to be here with you today. I'm excited to have this conversation.
I am excited too. And like I said in the introduction, this is not our first conversation. We have obviously had conversations before, and we'll talk a little bit about our time together. I will talk a little bit about that here after we, you know, get to talking. But I would like for you, if you would, for the first thing here, to tell everybody listening your loss story, kind of, because, you know, as I've said, you're not specific, you don't have a specific suicide loss in your life, but you do have loss. And so what brought you to working in the grief space? And I feel like loss story or stories is a good way to kind of springboard the next part.
Yeah, I think, you know, with a lot of people who end up in this space, it's kind of a long and winding journey. And so to start off the professional side of things, I opened up a massage practice about 4.5 years ago. And in that practice, I was really looking to hone in my marketing message and really build that business into what I had dreamed of it to be. And at the time, you know, when you're going through the marketing and advertising type classes, the the goal is to find your target demographic, your people, you know, who is it that you resonate the most with? And so at the time I was doing that work on really getting specific in that practice, I was going through a couple of different things loss-wise. So I have been volunteering at a camp called Camp Sunshine, which is up in Maine, and it's a camp for kids with life-threatening illnesses and their families. So the whole family goes to camp and they get a week respite and they get to connect with other families who have the same diagnosis that their children has. And so I've been volunteering there since 2001. And at the time where I was really trying to shape my practice, I was grieving the loss of a 4-year-old little boy that I had met through camp and just had this really deep connection with him. He changed my life in ways that it's hard to articulate to people who don't necessarily understand those type of relationships or connections. But what I was experiencing was this disconnect between the grief I was feeling and what I thought I should be feeling or what it was supposed to look like, or whether or not it was even appropriate for me to be grieving him because he wasn't my child. And so I had that element. And then at the same time, my uncle was on hospice. He was at the end phases of his life. And I was going to be seeing him for the last time. And in addition to that, I was in a relationship with somebody who had a medical crisis and had spent about a month in the hospital, both in ICU and then rehab care. And our lives were just really turned upside down by that instance. And so I had just layers of grief and it just kept coming up. And, you know, I had heard the adage of your misery is your ministry. And as I was going through all this grieving, it made sense to start focusing on that for other people. And with the massage practice I had at the time, it was really important to me to create a space where people who were grieving could come and have a soft space to land and to know that whatever emotion that they brought to the session, I would be able to hold that for them because I had been through a lot of my own losses. So through that massage practice, I started focusing on the grief work. And over time, it sort of switched in the balance where I was doing a lot more grief support. And, you know, folks would come into my office and spend probably the first half hour or 45 minutes of the session just verbalizing what their experience was and their losses. And very little body work would happen, but it was so healing in that nature. And so over the last 4 or so years, my practice has really morphed and changed into more grief support. And then with the pandemic, I closed down the bodywork portion of my practice, got certified as a coach. And now I do breakthrough coaching with people who are looking to move through their loss in a new way.
And that was how we came connected. And I should have looked back today, because I know I did before we started our coaching, but I think we originally connected somehow on Instagram. It was a lot longer ago than I think it was. Like, because I reached out to you finally to see about your coaching and whether it would be a good fit for where I was at and what I was needing. It was in the fall.
It was October that we first connected.
Yeah. I was thinking that it might've been September that I reached out to you or something like that. It wasn't long after the 4-year anniversary of Alex's death, I know, which is in August. So I know that makes sense timeline wise. And, so that was where we originally connected, but I've talked about it on my podcast before. So people that are listening that have listened to other ones, know that I had spent some time, especially in that fourth year, knowing that I needed, you know, I'll put it in air quotes, help, further help than what I had done up to that point, or at least I was ready for the next phase of that. And, having had, a mini stroke, which I haven't talked about much on the podcast, although that'll probably be something I talk about in one of my short episodes, but having experienced a mini stroke due to everything that was going on in my body physically in April, that kind of sidelined me again. But then I started looking a little bit, it became more important to me at that point because I knew if I didn't get my mind right, my body wasn't going to be right. And so knowing that I had to pay attention to my physical health, and I really started to incorporate the whole body, whole mind, all of it being important, So I started looking at different avenues and looking at traditional counseling, looking at traditional therapists. And all in the meanwhile, I'm looking and starting to study to be a grief coach. And one day I had one of those moments where I went, why am I not looking at a coach? This is what I believe in. This is what I'm training to do. I should be looking in the coaching realm. And I had been following you anyway. And I kept thinking, I think this is someone I want to reach out to. And I just didn't. So when I finally followed that gut nudge and did, the connection was really good. And I think we both felt like that it was what you were doing was going to be a very good fit for where I was at. And I'll embellish a little bit more as we talk about, you know, where I was, or you can, I don't care. But for people that don't know, and you touch base on the fact that your business has transformed, especially because of COVID, and you did go through a rebranding, and, you know, A Radical Life is your new brand. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about how you came to call it A Radical Life with Emily, because I think that's an awesome way to look at it, and, you know, talk to people a little bit about what one-on-one breakthrough coaching is and what that looks like going forward for you.
Sure. So the previous brand was Mind Body Grief. The idea of that was really, like you said, to encompass both the mind and the body as we're grieving, because the two work together. You know, if you heal one, the other still needs to be addressed. So if we look at it as a holistic approach, I really wanted to capture all of that with the branding that I had. With the coaching work that I do, there's two types of motivation. There's away from motivation. So it's moving away from the thing you don't want anymore. And then there's towards motivation, and it's moving towards the thing that you want. And so think of it, you know, sort of the carrot and the stick, right? You have a donkey and you smack it with a stick and it's going to move for a while. But after the sting of that stick wears off, it'll slow down. But if you have a carrot in front of its nose, it's going to keep moving forward because that carrot is always in front of its nose. And so towards motivation is for the long term, much more motivating for a lot of people. And so the rebrand was really my opportunity to embody that. If we focus on grief and we focus on loss, we focus on pain and hurt, we tend to attract more of that. But if we flip it over and we say, yes, we're going to honor the fact that loss has happened, but what's the next step of the journey? What's the thing that we want to do with our life after loss? For a lot of people, that's going to be much more motivating. It will be more positive and uplifting as we're starting to put those pieces back together. So it's not to ignore what's happened, but instead say, okay, so now that this has happened, what do I want next? And so I was just in that space of exploring what that might look like, and had a conversation with a fellow coach. And I just kept saying radical transformation, radical change, you know, stepping into something radically different. And that word just kept coming up. And, you know, the beauty of being able to have conversations with other people is they often distill the information and feed it back to you. So she said, well, you keep using that word. What do you think about a radical life? And there was just something to it that in my gut lit me up. It gave me that sort of excitement and that feeling of congruency for myself. And then we started to sort of peel that apart of what does that actually mean? And the reason that I chose to go with it is that a radical life is a wide enough term that you can really choose what a radical life looks like for you. And so for some people, it might be saying no to something that they have been saying yes to. It might be building a new boundary. It might be quitting a job or leaving a relationship or moving to a new location. It doesn't matter what the actions are, but the feeling that comes with those actions. It's like that, yes, I know that this is right for me. There's something inside of me that feels like this next step is home. This is what I want for myself. This is what I want for my life. And I'm excited to pursue that.
Yeah, I think it's so fitting. And of course, I come at it from a biased standpoint because I know what you do. But I think knowing that, I think it couldn't be a better fit for what you're doing and where you're headed with your business. So for everybody that's listening, I want to touch base on, and then I'll let you build from it from there on where I was at and what brought me to seek out the one-on-one breakthrough coaching that I did go through with Emily over the course of about 6 weeks. I came to Emily in a place that my verbiage was, I was stuck. And, you know, being at just over the 4-year mark, right at 4 years since I had lost my son, Alex, to suicide, it wasn't even so much that I was stuck in the grief process of grieving Alex, because at that point for me, with all the other things I had done, I felt like I was in a fairly solid place with grieving, because I don't believe grieving ends. I'm not going to ever stop loving my son, so I'm not going to stop grieving him. I believe it's about learning to live successfully. But the loss of Alex had caused me to be in the place that I was with many other things in my life. So it was, you know, kind of the catalyst, if you will. But I came to her with the word that I just felt stuck. So I know I've talked briefly with y'all about the fact that I put off starting the podcast for a while, that I just kept saying, you know, I'm going to launch, and I just wasn't getting there. And for me, the launch of this podcast was about launching the next step of my life or my radical journey. It was, and so I was standing in my own way, and fear was holding me back, which fear is so dramatically interwoven with grief. And I needed a way to get to the next place to where I was confident enough to take the next steps that I needed to and really fully step into the place that I wanted to be. And I was ruminating and marinating in some pieces of my grief that, you know, I'm sure you'll talk about anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt as kind of the main premise of what is worked on with your subconscious mind. But this particular breakthrough coaching program would not have been right for me at every place that I was, and it was right. And it was transformational for me going through this work with Emily, and probably on some level, some continued work that we'll do together, was so different then. And that's kind of where I'd like you to go with things now, is how is, for those people that are listening, somebody seeking a coach, a life transformational coach, and your practice is, you are certified in neuro-linguistic programming, which uses timeline therapy. So that's kind of the next place I want you to go, is what is the coaching that you do? What is neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy? I know you know hypnosis is part of your practice, but what is coaching versus counseling, or what is a coach versus a therapist, and can they be working together? Are they interchangeable? Do I need this? Am I at the right place for it? And what is it?
Yeah, I think that's a really important distinction to make, that therapy is not coaching and coaching is not therapy. And I'm not a therapist or a counselor. I'm certified as a coach, actually a master coach and also a trainer of this work, but that doesn't put me in the counseling or therapy realm. So the way I look at it is, therapy or counseling tends to look at everything that's happened up until this moment. So it's unpacking the emotions and the reactions and the experiences around what has happened in your loss or before your loss. And so it's really a way to emotionally process the events that have happened. And so for a lot of people, therapy is really beneficial early in grief, right? It's the opportunity to make sense of the thing that doesn't make sense. Right. When you lose somebody unexpectedly, it's our brain's way of trying to wrap itself around what's happened, because it's not something that you plan on. It's not that, you know, sort of foreseeable situation. So therapy is really great at sort of unpacking all of those things, dealing with the emotions that are really raw and present in the moment when you're in that session. I think, you know, at least my perspective is therapy or counseling is really great as your sort of initial first avenue of exploring your emotions and feelings and unpacking whatever has happened in your loss experience. And then, you know, there's sort of that turning point, and I don't know that there's a prescribed time. It's not 6 months or a year. You know, it's not after you've gotten through the first of your anniversaries or anything like that. But sort of this natural place in people's grieving process where it sort of flips over and it's like, okay, so now I've processed the what happened, the, you know, sort of unpacking the emotions around the experience itself. And now I'm kind of left in this, well, what's next place? And that's where our coach is a really beneficial person to bring in at that phase of the journey. So that's where I come in really with the transformational breakthrough coaching. It's okay, so you've done your hard work of the acute grieving. And it is hard work and it's exhausting. And for a long time in the grieving process, it's simply being present with the pain of the loss. And so when that subsides, it doesn't go away. Like you said, I truly believe the same as you. As long as you love the person that you've lost, you'll have an element of grief in your life. But now it's okay. So if you have the rest of your life to live, how do you hold that grief in a way that allows you to still pursue things that bring you joy and excitement and bring in love and connection in a way that feels really good? And so with the coaching that I do, what we're looking to do is basically peel away anything that doesn't move that goal forward. So the way that I look at this is we have a lifetime of experience prior to the loss that you've had. So everything that happened prior to the loss is stored somewhere in your unconscious mind. And that's just the way that our mind works. And so it's not a deficit. It's not something that you've done wrong. It's just that we have unresolved emotions that get stored down in our unconscious mind. And so with the work that I do, what we're looking to do is basically clear the backlog of those emotions. So you mentioned anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt. What our unconscious mind does is stores all of those memories in like a catalog. I like to think of my unconscious mind's memory storage as like a file room, right? And you've got just drawers, right? Like in a lawyer's office, maybe you might have file drawers. And so you've got one that's labeled anger and one that's labeled sadness, one that's labeled joy, another that's labeled love. It's not just the bad emotions. It's every experience we've ever had. We don't consciously remember all of those experiences because it would just overload our system. We wouldn't be able to brush our teeth in the morning if we had consciously remembering all of those things that have happened to us. So it goes down into this file room. Now, let's say in this given moment, I don't know, somebody cuts you off in traffic. And a reasonable response might be to grumble and be a little frustrated because they're inconsiderate. But let's say instead of a reasonable or warranted response to that, you fly off the handle and you're screaming and yelling and flipping the bird and beeping your horn, and now you cut them off, and suddenly it's this explosion of anger. What's happening in that moment is you have cause for anger, and your unconscious mind says, oh, this is great. We're going to push up all of the other unresolved anger so that you can resolve this. This is like the door is open. So if the door is open, then we're going to take advantage of this. So everything that's stored in that file drawer of anger jumps out and joins the anger party in the moment. Now, that's not beneficial for most of us. So with the work that we do in coaching, and this is the timeline therapy portion of the coaching, is we actually go back using conscious and unconscious integration. So we're using our conscious thought process to connect to that unconscious experience that's stored there. And we clear out that backlog of anger, because the theory behind it is if we learn what we need to learn from that experience, we can let go of the emotion of it, because the learnings are all that we really need in order to move forward and have different experiences in our life as a result of that. So we're basically clearing that backlog of anger in this instance. So now what happens is when you get cut off in traffic, you might even laugh. You might say, oh, that person's really in a rush. We're going to get there at the same time anyway, because you know how that happens. You end up at the same red light, even though they've, you know, zoomed around you.
Yes.
Right. And so it's an opportunity to be a little bit more objective, because you're not trying to also process the emotional weight that has been stored in that drawer for your entire life. So as we go through and clear out those emotions, now you can actually take a look at the loss and the grief that you're holding with a clearer view, a different lens, and it creates more space around it. So holding that loss becomes a little bit less intense than what it was holding the loss and all of the unresolved emotion.
Yeah. I got so absorbed listening to you talk about all of it, because I'm just going to take a moment to say that, because you've heard me say it before, but I'll let everybody else hear me say it. I still am in awe of how transformational this work was for me. I believed it going in. I knew it was going to be. I didn't know how it was going to be, but it makes so much sense to me to work with the subconscious, the unconscious mind, because you're exactly right. We know that there's so much information coming at us all the time, and that it isn't possible that we're storing all that right here in the conscious, because we would be a discombobled mess that couldn't focus on anything if everything was in the front of our mind. We take everything in and put it in this, like you said, file drawer, this place. And it just made sense when I thought, if I can get into where this stuff is all holding me back, that's, you know, the stuckness of where I was at. And I knew that that made sense. Can't tell you how it really works. I mean, meaning we can't always explain something that just does work, but I'll let Emily address a little bit about the, you know, I did my research going into this, and, you know, I already live in, I call it Wooville now. So I already live in the land of more holistic sciences. So it wasn't strange for me, but I was looking at all of the, preconceived ideas that some people have going into things that maybe mainstream medicine might look as a more alternative. And so I knew that neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy was kind of on that alternative therapy wheel, if you will. And if anything, that probably excited me more than it did scare me, but I still wanted to do my homework. And when I asked you the first time to kind of address with me the whole preconceived idea versus, you know, of is this just a bunch of woo and smoke and mirrors? You came at it from such a good angle, and I'm going to let you address that now, of the neuroscience of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I appreciate that. You know, it's like the sort of hybrid approach of Wooville and science. And I think that that's where I live. Just to sort of blend this into the story, I studied aviation in college. I have 2 degrees in aviation and was very mathematically minded. All the sciences that I studied were in the physics realm. So, you know, it's like having an answer to something always made sense to me. And so when I got into massage therapy, that was kind of the biggest step I took into, you know, the healing arts and my first sort of, you know, nod towards Wooville. Mm-hmm. But even in the work that I was doing there, I studied craniosacral therapy, which is very anatomically based, rooted in nervous system support and mm-hmm. lines of fascia and those kind of things. I like to be able to describe what's actually happening, because that's how my mind works. That's how I like to interpret things. And so neuro-linguistic programming was really the opportunity to do that. So to break it down into kind of the simplest form, neuro is the brain, linguistic is our language, and programming is what we do with all of that. So we receive, I think it's like 11 billion bits of information per second. And so imagine that I was throwing 11 billion matches at you every second. And so your reticular activating system, that's the thing that really accepts all of the information that we then interpret, can only capture 128 bits per second. So you have 11 billion matchsticks coming at you, and you can grab 128 per second. We're missing a lot of information because we simply can't interpret that amount of data on an ongoing basis. It would flood our system. There's just no way our humanness can handle all of that information. So we grab what feels familiar, what we know, you know, patterns that we've built over time in order to make that interpretation go seamlessly, right? So, you know, the kind of classic example is you want to buy a new car and you're all excited about this. I don't know. Let's say it's like a red little sedan. And you go and you buy your car and you're all excited and you're driving home from the dealership, and now you see a dozen red sedans around you. And you think, well, what the heck? Like, I thought this was such a cute little car. I've never really seen them on the road. And now all of a sudden they're everywhere. well, you've told your reticular activating system to pay attention to these little red sedans. Now, all of a sudden, you're seeing lots of little red sedans. And so that's the way it works. What you focus on is what you get more of, because you're only able to grab those 128 matchsticks per second. So now what happens is, as we receive that information, it goes through certain filters. And this is the programming part of it. We either delete, distort, or generalize that information in order to digest it in a way that's possible for us to then use that information. And it gets filtered through things like our belief system and our values, things that are important to us. So nobody's, you know, if you and I were sitting in the same room and we were looking at the same things, we would actually grab different pieces of information from that simply because of our lens that we're looking through things. So with neurolinguistic programming, what we're trying to do really is sort of digest that down into what's the actual information that we have. So one of the kind of common things that I'll do with the work is listen to the language that somebody is using. So if somebody says, "I always do X," and let's say whatever X is not beneficial for them, I would challenge always, because always is a universal, right? So it's never really that black and white, mm-hmm. right? And so to be able to look at the language that we use and unpack it for what it actually is often allows us to have a different viewpoint. So I always do X might become, well, sometimes I do X, but sometimes I do Y. Well, if sometimes you do Y, then, and Y is more beneficial for you than X was, how do you do more of Y? But also, what's the programming that allows X to even show up in your system as something that you choose to do or feel like maybe you don't have a choice, but you do anyway? And so it allows us to look at that 128 bits per second with different lenses. And oftentimes that will actually allow us to release the grip that we have on a problem. So just by using language, we can actually change the way we're looking at something. So a lot of times you might hear people talking about mindset work. A lot of times with mindset work, what you hear is, we'll just focus on the bright side. I think that that's kind of a load of garbage, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, there's always a silver lining, or, you know, they're in a better place, or whatever, you know, whatever people sort of want to offer as platitudes.
Grievers listening are all shaking their heads just like I am, going, yeah, how many times have we heard, oh, just think positive thoughts, or just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was just that easy, we would all do it. But what I'm looking to do instead is, what's the structure that holds your problem in place? And if we unpack what that structure is, automatically you have different choices. And that's the mindset shift of, this is the way that I perceived it. It's what was. And now this is what is. And so it often gives people a lot more in the way of choice, instead of feeling like, I have to feel this way, or I have to behave this way. When we understand the structure of that, then the structure kind of falls apart, and then we have options for something different.
Right. And yes, that's what it did. It took where I was in a destructive, limiting space. It took the emotion of, because that's where I was stuck. I was stuck in an emotional, destructive, limiting space with a lot of my thoughts. I was able, through the work with Emily, to unpack all of that, to be able to go back to a place with those experiences and let go of the emotion. I don't want people to think that this is about forgetting your loved one, getting over it, because everybody knows that I think that's a bunch of hooey, that, you know, you aren't going to just move on and go, okay, now I'm the, and that's not what this work is about. This work is, for me, it was one of the pieces that lives alongside my grief. But because my grief is so much a part of, because I use grief as a congruent thing for my love for Alex, my love for my father. I mean, because I've lost more than my son. My son's just my most traumatic, impactful loss. So that is a part of who I am. And that's, the sadness is still always going to be there. This didn't rid me of my sadness. Grievers, I'm not just suddenly never crying. I'm not suddenly, this isn't what that was about, but because of where I was at with anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt. Guilt is so big in suicide loss. I know you know that, Emily, but it's big in loss in general, but it's so big that stuff can become so destructive, and the inner dialogue and the emotion that goes along with it just doesn't serve you. And yet I didn't know how in my own way to reprogram the dialogue in my head. And that's what this does. This gets you to a place where, you know, you can become productive instead of destructive, and you can get out of your own way, and you can actually find yourself propelling forward. And because the limiting beliefs, limiting emotions, you know, that you had before tied to the negativity and all of that just aren't there. I don't know how to even describe it.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to chat about that a little bit, limiting belief portion of it. So, between the ages of 0 and 7, our unconscious minds are wide open. We're little sponges. It's the formative years of our lives. Every experience that we have in that period of time gets stored in the unconscious mind. But what happens between the ages of 0 and 7 is we don't have the opportunity to critically think about the things that have happened to us. And so a lot of times we have some misinterpretation there, right? So with the timeline therapy, we're looking to go to the first time that you experienced anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt, or any other negative emotions. And I say negative, not that they're bad, but just negative versus positive. We're not looking to release the backlog of love or joy, just the things that weigh us down. And so, you know, a lot of times we go to that 0 to 7 age because there was an event that happened that was misinterpreted, and it left us feeling angry or sad or neglected or whatever that emotion is. And so with timeline therapy, we're not going into the content of what happened. So we're not reliving traumas. We're oftentimes skipping over the kind of present loss that you're experiencing, going back to that sort of core experience of anger. Now, in addition to that, with the work that we do, the first session is really designed to find out what is that core limiting belief. So anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt are, you know, it's kind of like our emotional meatball, if you will. We tend to experience a lot of those emotions as we're grieving, or as we're processing any type of unexpected life event. But somewhere in there is also some belief system that holds that all together. And so for a lot of people, that core belief ends up being magnified through the losses that we're processing. So just to sort of give a wide array of core beliefs that I've seen, or my own as well, it's things like I'm not good enough, or I don't deserve to be happy. Mine was I deserve to suffer. It could be that I'm a disappointment or I'm a burden. And so if somewhere in that 0 to 7 age range, and I will say, even if you had the most golden, lovely childhood and everything was sunshine and roses and rainbows, you still have something in there that potentially could hold you back later on in life. So what we're trying to do is really get to the bottom of that. What is that belief system that then ends up playing itself out later on when you're processing loss or grieving or trying to make decisions and feeling like you're stuck? Right. So if you have a belief that you're not good enough, and this is not a conscious belief, you're not walking around, you know, wearing a baseball hat that says I'm not good enough, but it's the unconscious belief. It's the thing that sort of holds us in place under the guise of safety. Right. If we stay still and we stay small, we have this perceived notion of being safe. Oftentimes it's actually the opposite of that. We're safer if we live out loud and we live the life that we're meant to live. But if that belief system is sort of holding all of that in place, then it makes sense that you might not take the next step to move your podcast forward, or you might not, you know, expand your community or leave a job or, you know, make any massive changes. Because if you don't believe you're good enough, then how can you actually do something for yourself? And so with this work, we're, you know, basically jumping straight down into that hook, the thing that's keeping you in place, once we release that hook, which includes letting go of those negative emotions, but also the decision to believe that you're not good enough. So in my experience, when I did this breakthrough work as part of my training, I didn't realize that I actually had this belief about suffering. But once we unearthed it, and there's a series of questions that we use that are just designed to kind of open all of this up, it was that gut punch realization of, oh, that makes a lot of sense. I was working to not be in debt. I was exercising to not be fat. I was, you know, restricting my calories, again, not to be fat. It was, I wasn't able to necessarily envision my future, because if I had suffering in the past, then it meant that I would have suffering in the future. So I never actually allowed myself to dream about what the next phase might look like, because in my mind, unconsciously, there was this belief of more suffering that I was going to be inviting in. And so I had all of these away from motivations, like we chatted about earlier on in the conversation, of I don't want this. And so in not wanting that, I ended up creating a cycle of more of that. But once I realized that that core belief was that I deserve to suffer, and we did the work to heal that part of myself, now it's like I'm motivated to do the things that I really want to do. It allowed me to rebrand my business. I'm actually headed out on a nomadic journey. I'm going to be working digitally throughout the US this year. It allowed me to step out of my comfort zone and really dare to dream for something better than suffering. So this work, the neurolinguistic programming paired with the timeline therapy, allowed that portion of my unconscious mind to come to resolution. And so I think that's a really important aspect of this healing work, is that as you're grieving loss, and I honor the fact that I have not been impacted by suicide, but I can imagine, right? I can put myself in your shoes and try it on, if you will. And it is more significant than anything that I have experienced personally. But as you're processing that loss, and as you're, you know, putting together your pieces as a result of that loss, if in there you have a core belief that says something like you're a disappointment, or you're responsible for something, it only compounds the feelings of grief and sadness and anger. So in unpacking that belief system that was formed before your loss, it actually allows you to look at the loss in a different way.
Correct. That's a really important distinction. It leads into is some of the next question that I wanted to kind of ask you, but you already touched base on the fact that this work has to be done when you're ready to take responsibility for these things. You know, you said when you did this work, part of the process is you did the work yourself. I came to you with that big word, stuck. I'm stuck. I mean, I didn't have a better label for it than that, because that was like the emotion behind how I was feeling. And when we unpacked why I was stuck, it was because I wasn't enough. Which later, when you read back some of the things I said early on, I remember thinking, I said that? Like, and I said it was because the work that we did unpacked everything to the point that I now understood what my limiting belief was. And to go back and deal with that, like you said, in my own timeline prior to my loss, it suddenly became so, like, it was like a dumb moment. There are some definite dumb moments that I had in this, and where I just think, well, duh, this makes so much sense. I even said to Emily a couple of times, why could I not figure this out and do this work myself? Well, one, because it's hard. And you have to be ready to take responsibility. I remember you said you're either the cause or the effect, mm-hmm. which is kind of the away from toward that you're talking about a little bit too, right?
Yeah. So being at cause is taking responsibility for your actions and reactions to things. It's saying, I'm in my life right now because of the decisions that I've made. Now, that doesn't mean you're to blame.
Right.
It's not saying you're responsible for the loss that you've experienced, or you're responsible for somebody else's decisions, but it's taking ownership of where you are right now in this moment. And the opposite of that is being at the effect of the situation. It's the woe is me, martyrdom type mentality of I can't do whatever I want to do because of this thing that happened to me, right?
Right.
It's the opportunity to basically take no responsibility for whatever it is that's happening in your life, good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, the not being able to move forward with the, I think when we started the session, I had just put out the podcast. However, I didn't necessarily believe that I was like, it took me a year to make myself do this and get it done. I say make myself, it was what I really wanted to do. And I couldn't figure out why. And for me, the podcast is symbolic because it's not about being a lifetime professional podcaster. The podcast for me is about leftover pieces and in my radical life, my stepping forward into what I feel like my life's purpose is, which is working in the field of grief with grievers. I couldn't do it because the podcast for me is my first step. It's my step into this arena. It's my step into myself. It's my step into, and this is such important work. I talked to Emily about this during our sessions, but this work is so important to me at my core that I didn't know what my stuckness was, but it turns out that that whole belief that I wasn't enough was holding me back in this, because this is so big. And if I don't believe I'm enough, there's no way I'm going to be able to do what I need to do. And so that's where I was stuck. And that's what this unpacked for me was, you know, taking that I wasn't enough and believing that I absolutely am enough. And not only am I capable of doing all this, I deserve it. And I'm, you know, competent and all those things that I was tucked up and carrying all of the not enoughness. And that was holding me back in everything. And I think with suicide loss, we give ourselves a lot of excuses, which are tied to our guilt of why we couldn't, shouldn't, can't move forward. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely is not about letting go of Alex or my grief, because that's not going anywhere. It's about how I move forward and bring joy and sadness along with me and believe I'm enough to do the life's work that I want to do.
Yeah.
And so there's two parts of this next question I have for you, because one is, who do you coach? Meaning, who's right for the one-on-one breakthrough coaching? And because I'm already going to kind of answer that, everybody isn't going to be at the space where the one-on-one breakthrough transformational coaching that I went through is the right place for them. Is that the only people that you see? And if you see people that, and I'm just going to say this out loud because this is my podcast, but early grievers that are listening, this isn't where you are yet. I mean, like Emily said, just because I was ready at 4 years doesn't mean 4 years is a magical number either. It could be earlier, it could be later. It's not probably going to be in the firsts, in the middle, when you're still in shock. It's not going to be then. And do you offer anything that if people are listening, whether it's advice or your own services for early grievers, and what would that look like?
Yeah. So the first part of that, who I work with, I am a very emotional, like outwardly emotional person. My grieving process is very emotive. I have zero reservations around crying. I feel like it's cathartic. I think that that's a really healing way to move through things. For that reason, I tend to identify with women who are grieving. Men have, and this is sort of broad sweeping, so please take this with a grain of salt. Men have a different process around grief. They're much more internal about their experience. Now, if there are men who identify with the message and they're very ready to process where they are and where they want to go, I'm open for that. As it stands now, all of my coaching work has been with women. So, you know, sort of that broad sort of sweeping statement of I don't work with everyone. I generally work with women. And like you've said, it's not, this breakthrough coaching is not for people who are in that early and acute phase of their grief. Where I come in is you've done the therapy or the counseling or the group work. You've found a way to connect to your grief in a way that feels congruent for you, and you're comfortable in that process. Then you're looking for the next step. You're looking for the, it's kind of that moment where you wake up and you're like, wow, if this is my life for the rest of my life, I don't want to be here, right? It's that something is off kilter, something is incongruent, you're stuck or you're angry, or there's something that's keeping you from taking the next step. And so that's really that catalyst moment for saying, okay, I'm ready for a coach. I'm ready to not be in this spot for any longer. So it's, you know, we call it the universal model of change in the coaching world. It's like you sort of traverse between point A and point B, right? It's like point A is okay. Point B is a little bit farther away from it, but it's a little bit uncomfortable and a little bit scary. So then you go back to point A and you kind of go from point A to point B to point A to point B, back and forth and back and forth for a period of time. And then you're like, you know what? I'm really sick of this pattern. I'm ready for something different. Now, the universal model of change says in order to go to point C is actually a valley. It's down in like a, you know, a deep, what could look like a deep dark hole for some people.
A pit.
Yeah. But once you heal whatever is in that C, you launch up to D, which is up-leveling your life, right? And then the pattern kind of starts all over again. So if you, you know, obviously this is an auditory experience for you. I can't draw it, but it almost looks like a, you know, sort of stair step way of progressing through life. There has to be a bit of a pitfall in order to launch up to the next thing. And so I'm kind of your guide for that, if you will. A lot of people, they look over the edge of B down into C and they say, yeah, right, I'm not going there. What happens if I fall into C and I never come out?
And right? I can't get out. Exactly.
Yeah. It's easier to stay in A to B, A to B, A to B, right? So if you're at that place of, I've tried the things that I know how to do on my own, and I'm really ready for the next step, and I'm ready to heal whatever is in that deep, dark pit in order to get up to the next phase of my life, that's when a coach is a really great place to bring in that piece of the puzzle. Now, for people who are... Oh, go ahead.
No. Finish.
I was going to say, for people who are earlier in their grief or not quite at that phase where they're ready for that dramatic, that radical of a shift, I do offer hypnosis as a standalone session. And we haven't really talked about hypnosis a whole lot yet, but it's one of the modalities that I use as part of the breakthrough coaching. It's kind of the thing that seals everything in place after we make, you know, massive change. Hypnosis is the way to basically get our conscious thought process out of the way. And it allows us to drop in suggestions into the unconscious mind. So if we look at the conscious-unconscious integration for just a second, it's like your conscious mind is the captain of a ship and your unconscious mind is the crew. So now in, you know, that 0 to 7 age range, the crew learns how to operate the ship. And so the crew is good at it. It's going, you know, in its direction and it's efficient and it's doing its job. But now let's say in this phase where you're at, the captain, the conscious mind says, okay, we've been going straight for a long time, but now I want to take a turn to the left. We're going to turn left. Well, the crew, your unconscious mind has been going straight for so long that they don't really know how to go left yet, right? Or they might not trust that going left is an appropriate direction or a safe direction. So with hypnosis, what we're doing is basically dropping down into those crew members and saying, okay, we can go left. It's safe to go left. Captain says, go left. You're going to follow, and it's okay to follow. And so whatever that looks like for your life, it could be feeling safe to feel your emotions. It could be allowing your brain to rest at night so that you get better sleep. It might be encouraging more physical motion or activity in your day. It could be any smaller goal that you're looking to achieve that will help alleviate some of the intensity of the grieving process. And so we would have a dialogue about what things look like now and what changes you'd like to see, and then use hypnosis in order to help you achieve that phase of your journey. So it's a much smaller bite of the work, and it doesn't require this just really sort of open and exposed emotional exploration that the breakthrough coaching does.
Right. And we did end my breakthrough coaching, and I know you probably do that most of the time. I think you said you do it sometimes, not all the time. It depends on the breakthrough coaching and what the goal is and, you know, where you've gone. But we did end my with a session of hypnotherapy. Unbeknownst to me, I, according to Emily, was hypnosis was something that was fairly easy for me to, I was receptive to it. Maybe that's a good way to put it. I mean, probably everybody isn't as receptive or whatever. I also feel like I'm in a good place in life with that. I try to practice meditation. I know how to be silent. Grief has taught me how to be silent in my own brain. And so, yeah, it was very reaffirming for me, even though I'm, and so because I have been through that piece as part of what we did for the breakthrough, I can speak to that. And that if I had in the first year ish, everybody knows there's an ish to the grief timeline. If in the first year ish, when I was in that acute grieving process, and for the people that are listening that are, let this be, there's two hope pieces here. The hope that hearing me say that there is going to be a time when it's not as acute and that you will be looking for some place to move forward in, but to know that if it is still acute, that I feel like if I had known about the possibility of hypnosis as one tool that I could have used to, you kind of hit the nail on the head. Not being able to sleep is what I should say. Not being able to sleep was huge for me. So I'll just stick on that point. We could talk about other ones that might have worked too. But if I had gone to you at that stage and you said you're not ready for breakthrough coaching yet, you're still acutely grieving, but maybe I can help you with a tool that would help your sleep. Because then if my sleep had been better, I could have also done some other things better and maybe been more, I don't encourage people to move through grief any faster than they need to, but there also is a point, I mean, you should have some forward motion going on, right? And even if it's slow at times, it should. And so that's when I tell people, that's how you know you need quote unquote help, is if you don't feel like you're still forward moving. And I think hypnosis would be a good tool for that. And I want to be sure that, you know, I address that this one-on-one breakthrough coaching and what I used it for, I think Emily's done a good job at saying that, you know, transformation to everybody is different. So I needed it to be able to move forward into my life's purpose. I don't think, my opinion on my podcast is that suicide loss grievers, most of you that are listening will not ever be able to live successfully in a life that looks exactly like your life looked before. This transformation is so profound. This loss, this trauma is so profound in what it does to you, which is why my logo is a broken heart with a piece that's still missing, two pieces that are still missing, I think, is because it was really important to me to make sure that people understood that it is about putting the leftover pieces back together for me. And I think many, many suicide loss survivors would say that. And so a lot of people that are listening, their transformation might be that they need to a different job, or they need a, you know, it's a different, they need to look at sometimes our support structure and our friends and our interests. I mean, all of this, we look at life so differently after we've lost somebody so significant to suicide. And there isn't any putting that heart back together and making it look and function. And that means everything around us isn't going to be the same either. And I think a lot of people get that are grieving the loss of suicide, get really stuck in what now and how do I get there? Because we just don't know. So suicide loss just lends itself to, I think, this type of coaching or something like this being something that you're going to need at some point? Because if it goes back to if we could just snap out of it, or if we could just figure it out on our own, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Wouldn't we? I mean, I was wanting so desperately not to be where I was. And yet I needed, you know, I needed a tool. This is about teaching you to have the power yourself. It isn't like, you know, I'm not going to go, you weren't working on me. You were helping me work on myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a perfect way to kind of sum that up. I'm a guide for the process, but there's nothing that I can do to you to change it.
Right. And even the hypnosis piece is, it's about the unconscious mind also. It's not about putting you into some, you know, movie version of a trance. And from now on, when I hear a horn, I'm going to cluck like a chicken. That's not what the hypnosis piece is. If anybody thinks that, please message me so I can clear that up for you. That's not what hypnosis is. It's about the state of being able to reaffirm things with your subconscious mind.
Yeah, it's not a blackout state or a state of not being in control. You know, I always preface my sessions with, you're in control the whole time. If I were to give you a suggestion that were outside of your values, you simply would say, no, thank you, and not do it, right? I can't force you to rob a bank. I can't force you to do a headstand if you don't have the skills to do a headstand. I'm certainly not in the business of making people cluck like chickens.
Right.
I can do a stage show. That's purely for entertainment purposes and not in a therapeutic setting.
But that's not what it's about. It's very, very serious, very intentional, very therapeutic and cathartic. And the tools that I have now are just invaluable. And, you know, I will go back to probably reaffirm and rework some of this as I continue to grow with Emily. And so we will do some, that's one of the things you do offer is, you know, kind of what will we call it? Follow-up. Will you tell people a little bit like the, just as far as what we invested time-wise, if somebody's thinking to themselves before they would even consider reaching out to you, if they were interested, that what the time commitment that Breakthrough Coaching is for someone?
Sure. So this is where it is radically different from a therapeutic approach. We work within a 12-hour container. And so it's four sessions that are three-hour blocks each. And so ideally, we would meet once a week. Melissa, I think you and I met over 6 weeks because of the holidays and some time to process in between sessions. But the goal of this work is not for it to be ongoing and forever. It's designed to be a really intense breakthrough experience so that you can get to living your life. It's not once a week for 50 minutes for, you know, the rest of your life kind of therapeutic experience. It's, we're going to jump in, do the work, get it done, and then you can go and really implement that in your own life. So very intense in the sort of the framework and experience of it. And like you said, there's always the option for ongoing work. This doesn't solve all of your life problems. It lets you get into the next phase of things. And like you said, you'll then use the work and apply it to situations that come up as you navigate life after loss. But it's a really good foundation because what you learn in the breakthrough experience are tools that you'll continue to use probably for the rest of your life. And one of the things that I was thinking about as you were chatting a little bit ago is one of the common themes that I've seen in the grief world, regardless of what the type of loss is this desire for validation in your grief, right? That if you're 4 years, 6 years, 12 years, 100 years post-loss and you're still grieving, that there are people who will say, why are you still grieving? Haven't you just gotten over it yet? It's, you know, what's wrong with you? Why can't you get your act together? You know, those kind of things that people who haven't experienced a really intense loss don't understand the nature of grief. With this work, you are able to then validate that experience for yourself, that you don't need to seek other people's validation, because if you believe that you're enough, or if you believe that you can trust your own emotions, or whatever that sort of core belief is that we unlock, you now know congruently 100% that your experience in your loss is real and it is valid. And suddenly mm-hmm. that noise around you doesn't necessarily mean so much, because you're able to see it for what it is. And it might be at that point, the better opportunity is, instead of questioning your own process, it might be questioning your relationship with that person. And it might be questioning the boundaries that you've set with that person. And so it's really that opportunity to step into the power of yourself after loss, so that you know that the decisions that you're making for yourself are the right decisions, and that the support system that you have around yourself is the right support system. But that as your emotions continue to come up, because like you said, this doesn't delete emotions, it doesn't delete the grieving process, it allows you to trust that that process is the process that is right for you, regardless right. of the timeline.
Well, and that's important distinction to make for me, is that people understand that I feel like I got what I needed from the breakthrough coaching, in that it accomplished the goal. It isn't an intense, meant to be a breakthrough. So when I say I may work with Emily ongoing, I don't want to give the thought that it didn't accomplish what it was supposed to, but I'm not a done person, meaning I'm not done with my growth as a person. I'm not done with my grief. I'm not done with a lot of things. And so for me, I feel like, what, just so I can put this in words for other people, and then we'll try to get this wrapped up so this episode doesn't go on longer than people can listen to. So the follow-up work that I feel like that I probably will reach out and probably not forever have on some level with Emily will be just kind of, it might even be a few more hypnosis sessions, because I may just want to kind of solidify a little bit more some of the work that we did, you know, just kind of a reaffirming, you know, as I'm working this stuff myself now, as I've learned the tools, as I've gained the tools, it for me, I feel like it will just be helpful if, especially over, and I'm going to put an ish on this again, the next 6-ish months, if I have, and that could be 3 sessions, that could be whatever when it feels right, I feel like I'll know, but I feel like just a little bit more reaffirming is something that I probably am going to desire, to feel like I'm really solid in my foundation that we've laid. So, and that might not be something that everybody feels, that may be unique, you know, to me and my situation, but I know that you've said you're, you know, of course, open to that follow-up work. So, yeah. For the sake of time, I'd love to know if there's anything else you feel like you haven't talked about, but I'd like you to be sure to end, and I will have all of it in the show notes. Everything you give me, I'll put in the show notes, but just to say it out loud for people that either can't find the show notes, don't know where they're at, if they don't know where to click. So would you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. So on Facebook and Instagram, it's at A Radical Life with Emily. And the website is at aradicallifewithemily.com. So all pretty simple and uniform there. But Facebook and Instagram, I post regular content. I have a blog that will be up and running shortly. It's currently under the last pieces of construction. And so if you go to aradicallifewithemily.com and subscribe to the newsletter, you'll get automatic updates when a new blog post is launched.
Good. Yeah. And if nothing else, her content on Instagram is definitely worth following her, even if the coaching is not something that resonates with you. I would think any griever would benefit from your content on social media. So I'm so thankful that we had this conversation today. I think, you know, just one more tool that I've put in my toolbox, and I couldn't be more thankful for the work that we did. And the bigger piece of that is thankful for the connection that we have because of it.
Likewise.
Well, thank you so much, and we will talk soon.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Grievers, it is my hope that from today, you will take that which serves you and simply leave the rest. If you connect with what you have heard, please subscribe to get notified of my new episodes every week, and please feel free to share it with others in the Suicide Loss community. If you are so led, I would also be honored if you would leave a review so that others might find us more easily. You can find me and all ways to connect with me at my Instagram, The Leftover Pieces. I want you to know that I know how very, very hard life is now. It's true that we will never be the same, but we are going to be okay. We will figure this out somehow, together. And we will keep our loved ones with us, because there is no getting over or past grief, only learning to live more gracefully alongside it. Only through talk can we keep their memories alive, learn to live again, and bring some awareness so that less will suffer. Join me again next week, and we will keep the talk going. We will sign off today, as always, with the wise words of my Alex's favorite, Peter Pan. Never say goodbye, because goodbye means going away, and going away means forgetting. Grievers, no one here is forgetting. Talk soon.